Ineon psevos, critias ke Platon.
The noble lie. In creating leaders, God mixed in gold, making them most valuable. For those who support these leaders, he used silver, while farmers and other workers were made from iron and brass. If a leader has children who are made of brass or iron, they should not feel sorry for them. Instead, they must assign them roles that match their nature, placing them among artisans or farmers. Conversely, if a child is born with qualities of gold or silver, they should be honored and elevated to the higher positions, such as guardians or assistants. This is based on a belief that the state will face ruin if a leader of brass or iron is in charge and completely pulled out of Plato's butt. From the Parable of the Metals, in Book 3 of the Republic. Let me teach you true wisdom without the noble lie. In any compromise between good and evil, it is only evil that can profit. Ayn Rand.
Critias, your recent words trouble me more than the hemlock that awaits. You speak of invisible waters as tools for governing the masses, as if truth were a thing to be crafted rather than discovered. But tell me, my friend, if we fashion gods to frighten man into virtue, do we not make ourselves the very tyrants we claim to oppose? You would have leaders become puppet masters, pulling strings of fear and superstition. Yet what becomes of the puppeteer who loses himself in his own theater? I have spent my life questioning, not because I love confusion, but because I love clarity. When you manufacture sacred authority, you murder the very thing that makes us human, our capacity to seek truth together, to admit ignorance, to grow. You would replace the difficult beauty of genuine inquiry with the easy poison of controlled belief. The charges they bring against me, corrupting youth, denying the gods, these same accusations will echo through centuries, won't they? Every time someone asks inconvenient questions, every time someone refuses to bow before manufactured mystery, they will hear these words again. You are helping them write the script. I know you believe you serve order. But consider, when we teach people to believe without questioning, when we make sacred what serves power rather than truth, do we not plant seeds of a more terrible chaos? What happens when your invisible watchers become real inquisitors? When your useful myths become instruments of torture? The midwife helps bring forth what is already within. You would instead stuff empty vessels with whatever serves your purpose. But emptied vessels eventually crack, my friend. And when they do, the violence that pours forth will dwarf any disorder you sought to prevent. I go to my death still asking questions. You will live to see your answers implemented. I wonder which of us will rest easier. Your teacher, though you have ceased to be my student, Socrates. Remember our conversations about the examined life? I fear you have stopped examining and begun engineering instead. When you build your invisible watchers, remember that someone, someday, will be watching you too. A letter from Critias to a trusted disciple, some years after the murder of Socrates. The old fool is dead, and with him dies the last voice of that naive idealism that would unravel civilization itself. You ask why I did not speak for Socrates when the charges were brought. Let me explain what he never understood, and what you must learn if you are to be useful in the work ahead. Socrates believed in truth as if it were some shining thing that men could grasp and hold. But I have seen what happens when you give ordinary people unvarnished truth. Chaos, rebellion, the collapse of all order. The masses are not philosophers. They are children who need stories to sleep soundly at night. Watch a mother lie to her child about where his dead father has gone.
He watches over you from the heavens, she says,
and the child stops weeping. Is this not more merciful than the truth? Scale this wisdom to a city, to an empire, and you begin to understand governance. I have been developing what I call the theory of necessary fictions. In the beginning, some clever lawgiver understood that human eyes see only so much. Human hands can punish only those crimes they witness. But what of the secret theft? How do we govern the shadows where law cannot reach? The solution was brilliant in its simplicity. Create invisible watchers, gods who see all, spirits who judge every action, eternal punishments that await the wicked. You see, my dear student, religion is the most sophisticated technology ever invented. It places a guard in every human heart, a judge in every conscience, a prison around every soul. And unlike earthly law, it costs nothing to maintain once properly established. Socrates called this corruption of youth, but he had it backwards. It is his questioning that corrupts, his endless why and how do you know, that dissolves the very foundations that keep men from tearing each other apart. He would rather have truth and chaos than peace and useful myths. I watched him drink the hemlock, still asking questions, still believing that examined life was worth living. Even facing death, he could not see that unexamined belief is what makes life livable for everyone else. Now comes our opportunity. Athens needs new stories, stronger bonds, more effective invisible watchers. The old gods grew too familiar, too human in their flaws. We must craft something more terrible and more beautiful. Deities that inspire both absolute fear and absolute devotion. Think of it. If we can make people believe that their thoughts are watched, their secret deeds recorded, their eternal fate hanging on obedience to our, nay, to divine will, then we need not worry about rebellion. Never fear that truth will disrupt order. The people will police themselves. They will bring their neighbors before our altars to confess crimes we never could have discovered. They will surrender their gold, their children, their very lives, believing it wholly. And the beauty of it? They will thank us for the privilege. Socrates died still believing that an unexamined life was not worth living. I say, an uncontrolled life is not worth permitting. We will give them invisible chains and call them salvation. We will give them beautiful terrors and call them hope. The work begins now. Study what I have taught you about the manufacture of awe, the cultivation of guilt, and the art of making the extraordinary seem inevitable. We have temples to build, myths to spread, and most importantly, questioners to silence before they can poison another generation with their dangerous love of truth. Your master in the necessary arts, Critus. Postscriptum. Burn this letter after you have memorized its contents. Even our truths must remain invisible to those who would not understand their purpose.
My dearest Plato, I find I have one more inquiry that will not rest. How did you transform my love of wisdom into a blueprint for tyranny? You have made me the speaker of your republic, putting words in my mouth that taste of ash and ambition. You have me advocating for noble lies, as if any lie could be noble. As if truth could be noble only when convenient. Do you not see what you have done? You have taken my method of questioning everything and used it to justify questioning nothing. I spent my life demonstrating that we know nothing, that wisdom begins with admitting ignorance, yet in your dialogues you have Socrates confidently discussing societies, crafting myths, deciding what truths the masses may handle. This is not the path I walked, beloved student! This is the very authoritarianism I died opposing! You speak of philosopher kings as if wisdom could be legislated, as if truth could be rationed like bread in a siege. But tell me, who decides which lies are noble? Who determines what reality the people can bear? And when that power corrupts the decider, as all power must, what prevents your noble lie from becoming mere tyranny with philosophical decoration? You have learned the wrong lesson from my death. I was executed not because I sought to govern others, but because I refused to let others govern my mind. Yet you would create a system where philosopher kings do precisely what Athens did to me. Decide what thoughts are safe, what questions permitted, what truths the people may know. Any compromise between good and evil, it is only evil that can profit. When you blend the poison of deception with the medicine of philosophy, you do not neutralize the poison. You make it palatable. You have made me your mouthpiece. But my mouth spoke different words. I said, I know that I know nothing. You have me designing perfect states as if knowledge were a thing I possessed. I said, the unexamined life is not worth living. You have me advocating for lives deliberately kept unexamined through beautiful myths. I said, follow the argument wherever it leads. You stop the argument wherever it threatens your republic. I adored you, Plato. I loved your mind, your hunger for understanding, your beautiful soul reaching toward truth. But somewhere in your grief over my death, you decided that if Athens killed the man who questioned everything, then perhaps questioning everything was the problem. It was not. The problem was Athens. It was their refusal to live with questions. You would solve this by eliminating the questions rather than changing Athens. You would have created a city where my death was impossible because my life would have been impossible. The place where the philosopher kings do the questioning, and everyone else accepts the noble lies. But wisdom is not a crown to be worn by the few. It is a fire that burns in every human heart that dares to wonder. Your republic would smother that fire in all but the chosen guardians, calling the darkness that remains order. I died believing that every soul could reach philosophy, that every mind could love wisdom, that truth was humanity's birthright. You would make philosophy a privilege of class, wisdom a tool of rule, truth a luxury the masses cannot afford. You have built me a beautiful tomb, dear student. But in making me the architect of your managed reality, you have buried alive everything I actually stood for. The hemlock killed my body in a day. Your republic kills my spirit daily. In every reader who learns to accept that some people are meant to question while others are meant to believe. Your teacher, Socrates. When your philosopher kings inevitably become tyrants, remember that you armed them with my name and called their tyranny wisdom. The blood of every silenced questioner will be on both our hands. Mine for inspiring you, yours for corrupting the inspiration. Closing the ancient chapter.
And so we witness the first great tragedy of human civilization. Not a natural disaster or plague, but something far more insidious, the deliberate abandonment of wisdom itself. Picture Rome at its height, a vast empire where gods multiplied like market stalls, where new deities arrived with every conquered territory, where religious innovation was as common as trade. This was not tolerance born of wisdom, but indifference born of spiritual exhaustion. The Romans had learned to see all gods as equally useful, which meant they had learned to see all gods as equally false. Into this vacuum of authentic seeking, where truth had been traded for convenience and wisdom for power, emerged something unprecedented. Religions that demanded not just worship, but the abandonment of questioning itself. Christianity was born not in an age of tyranny, but in an age of spiritual bankruptcy, where humanity had grown so weary of seeking truth that it welcomed those who claimed to possess it absolutely. The tragedy is almost unbearable to contemplate. Had Socrates' vision prevailed, had humanity chosen the difficult path of questions over the easy path of manufactured answers, the next 1,000 years might have seen temples of inquiry rather than fortresses of dogma. Instead of terrifying inquisitors, we would have had loving philosophers. Instead of heresy trials, we might have had schools of thought. Instead of burning books, we might have been writing them. But we chose otherwise. We chose the invisible watchers over the examined life. We chose noble lies over humble truth. We chose the comfort of certainty over the adventure of discovery. And in making these choices, we set the stage for horrors that would dwarf anything the ancient world had ever imagined. The Romans, seeing their empire crumble, tried to restore it with more gods, more rituals, more persecution of those who threatened their artificial order. They had learned nothing from Athens' execution of Socrates, nothing from the warnings of genuine philosophers. They doubled down on the very spiritual hollowness that was destroying them. Emperor after emperor discovered what Crates had taught, that manufactured belief could control populations. What they failed to understand was what Socrates had known, that souls emptied of authentic seeking become vessels for any horror that promises certainty. By the time Constantine legalized Christianity, the transformation was complete. The Roman appetite for spiritual convenience had created the perfect condition for a religion that would not merely coexist with other beliefs, but would claim exclusive dominion over truth itself. The polytheistic marketplace of gods gave way to a monopoly of salvation. The infrastructure was already in place. The techniques of mass manipulation, the bureaucracy of belief management, the legal frameworks for punishing dissent,
Christianity did not create these tools. It inherited them from a civilization that had already abandoned the pursuit of wisdom for the exercise of control. What followed was not an accident. It was the inevitable consequence of choosing lies over truth, answers over questions, authority over authenticity. Every burnt library, every silent scholar, every woman condemned as a witch, all of it flows from that moment when humanity decided that reality was too difficult and uncertainty too frightening. The ancient world ended not with barbarian invasions or economic collapse, but with the death of the very idea that truth was worth seeking. What emerged from its ashes would prove that when humans stop asking questions, they begin burning questioners. And so, as we turn page from the world that killed Socrates for his questions to the world that would kill hundreds of thousands for even having answers that differed from the approved ones, the thread is unbroken. A straight line from Critias' invisible watchers to the very inquisitors who would soon police not just behavior, but thought itself. The wisdom of the ancients was not lost in some catastrophe. It was surrendered, deliberately and systematically, by people who found lies more convenient than truth, and control more comfortable than freedom. This is how civilizations truly die. Not with a bang, but with a whispered, "Yes, we will stop asking questions now." The Roman Empire fell, but the empire of manufactured belief that rose from its ruins would prove far more terrible than anything even Caesar ever imagined.